It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. One of the more divisive issues in America today is the debate over energy. The issue of energy and sustainability has proven to be polarizing, separating equally passionate opinions and perspectives. But a documentary producer and director named Gregory Kallenberg has come up with an idea he calls the Rational Middle Ground series to encourage a dialogue based on mutual respect when it comes to sustaining America's energy future. And he has brought his series to Pittsburgh. He joins us now in Studio A. Gregory Kallenberg, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
It's always great to be in Pittsburgh.
If you have a comment or question for our guest, you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at hashtag EPLive. Where is the middle ground for you when it comes to discussing the issue of energy and sustainability? What questions do you have? What are the aspects of this conversation that you don't have a full grasp of? Call us at 412-246-2002. And I guess the first question I would ask you, Gregory, is to have you explain your Rational Middle Ground project and what is behind it.
Well, you know, it all started when I did a film called Haynesville, which was about a natural gas find in northwest Louisiana. And it followed three people's lives, you know, where you get to really kind of see all sides of the issue when an energy boom lands on you know, a geographic area. And what was interesting is we came out at a fascinating time in the sense that you had the group starting to be polarized around energy. But Haynesville, when you see it, it's not a film that really tells you what to think. It's not an advocacy piece. It's more of a piece that sort of shows you the landscape and the issue and then lets the viewer make up their mind. And we saw this tremendous success in sort of audiences sort of gathering around the film, wanting to know the facts about that issue. To me, I always was overjoyed to kind of watch both sides come into a room and have a discussion over the film. And where the Rational Middle Energy series was born out of was that that a lot of these people didn't really know the first thing about energy. And to me, when you look at energy, and when I say energy, I mean it's how your listeners are hearing me right now is thanks to energy or the lights above their head or the ability to drive to work every day. It's an essential thing that we need to sort of start focusing on if we're going to start thinking about our future just as a people. So to me, the Rational Energy series was really – it was as much about sort of creating films that put the facts out there that allow people to – sort of gather around certain issues. I mean, in the film series, we have, you know, Energy 101 all the way to Future Renewables to Realities of Drilling. To have that be the centerpiece of a discussion and that discussion lead to, as you said before, a civil solutions-based forum. And we're starting to see that take hold.
When you talk about Energy 101, what is it? What are the basic things that people are simply not cognizant of that they don't think about or want to think about or simply don't understand?
Well, you know, I think that the good and the bad of being an American is that we believe that we have this entitlement to cheap energy. And I think that that's a tough place to start when, you know, when we flick a light switch, the lights go on. And we don't really think about the impact that energy has coming out of the ground or the way it gets produced or how much of it we use. You know, I was just speaking to a high school class and we were talking about, you know, that plug that takes it from the light socket to the cell phone that charges it, you know, what is behind that? And nobody raised their hand who knew that that resource could be coal, it could be natural gas, it could be nuclear in this area, or some small forms of renewable. So, you know, to me, I think there's a base understanding that needs to take place. But, you know, again, what the Rational Middle Energy series tries to do is it, you know, it's 22 films. So you can sort of set your level wherever you want. I mean, if you feel you know a lot about energy, it's okay to skip Energy 101 and have that discussion around something, you know, deeper. Could be transportation, could be sustainability, could be conservation efficiency.
Is a lot of the disconnect, does that come from the sources of what generates electricity, coal and that kind of thing, that we don't think that far down the line to where the energy, where the electricity is coming from?
I think that's an excellent point. I mean, I don't think that we do think about where it comes from or how it gets extracted or how it gets burned.
We just kind of think that it's there.
Right.
And it's funny because when you think about, it wasn't too long ago that, you had the rural electrification projects in the mid 20th century. So, not long ago really at all when you think about it, that older men who did not grow up with electricity were amazed and would maybe – there were stories about people that would sit up all night in the Midwest flicking the light switch on and off, just amazed that the light would come on instantaneously.
That's a great, great picture. I mean, yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, we have lived with, easy, cheap energy for a long time. I mean, again, going back to these high school kids, I asked them what they would think if they went home and the light switch didn't turn on the lights or their computer wouldn't work. And I mean, it was almost like a riot. You know, I mean, it was certainly something where we as a people, and it's not just high school kids, it's people my age, and I'm, 46, God forbid. But like, where you don't think about that idea of like that gasoline coming from someplace. You just want to put the pump in. You want to push the trigger. You want it to fill up and you want to drive off. And, that's an issue when you start thinking about what an energy future has to be and how we have to start planning for it.
Do people have to start thinking about what happens if the power grid goes out, if there is a massive power failure? What would go on? It almost seems inconceivable to people that we would lose power. Therefore, we don't think about what to do in the event of losing power.
Well, it's such an interesting quandary. When you look at what these hurricanes brought Texas and Louisiana, when you looked at Rita and Katrina, I have a brother-in-law that lives in Houston, Texas, and he almost looked at it as like pioneer days. He was without power for 72 hours. So it is something that we need, and it's something that, thank God we have. But I don't think we think a lot about what would happen if we didn't have it.
So when it comes to energy and sustainability and how we make sure that we keep the power going, how much of a bifurcation is there when it comes to the opinions on one side of the issue or another when it comes to finding that middle ground of agreement on sustaining power?
I mean, I think it depends on which resource you're talking about and where you stand on it. But, there's certainly polarized camps, across the divide, whether it be about coal and its development or natural gas. But, you even get controversy when you start to place wind turbines in the wrong place. I mean, there's a term.
So how so?
Well, I mean, I'll give you the great example, and it sort of is based in this whole sort of this NIMBYism, which is that not in my backyard, is that everybody wants the power. They don't want to look at it. And, mm-hmm. Of course, there was the famous incident in Cape Cod where they wanted to do the offshore power. But the people of Cape Cod, being moneyed, they like pristine ocean, they didn't want offshore power. Now, you're talking about one of the cleanest sources that there are and one of the best wind corridors there are in the country, and yet the citizenry of Cape Cod didn't allow there to be that energy source off their coast. I mean, it's – even if you go into the countryside here and you talk to some of the people in the rural areas, I guarantee you wouldn't find everybody loving the idea of having a wind turbine in their backyard or even the transmission lines. I mean, the point being that everything sort of has a cost, and that cost equates to a benefit. It's whether you're willing to pay the cost.
Right. And it's – I would imagine it's just the same for a gas well, especially after what happened last week that – there are just as many people who wouldn't want that. So, where do you end up putting these things?
Yeah. Well, absolutely. I mean, the issue that's out there, whether it be natural gas development or coal mining is that they're not mining it to cajole us into buying that energy off the shelf like a box of Tide. This is stuff we use. You know, between you and I, we have a lamp, and that lamp is illuminated by energy. And you know, everything around us has something to do or has touched energy or been influenced by energy or is being powered by energy right now. So really, it's a function of our needs that are sort of driving the supply.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and my guest is documentary producer, director Gregory Kallenberg. And we're talking about his Rational Middle Energy series you presented last night as part of Bricolage's Fifth Wall series. How did that go? What was the response like?
You know, I have to say that one of the things I love about coming to Pittsburgh is that it is an amazing audience. I mean, very knowledgeable, wants to have that discussion. But what's more than that is that they're willing to have, you know, the Rational Middle discussion, which is, again, you know, when you look at what we expect the Rational Middle to be, it's sort of leaving the ideological rhetoric at the door and then coming to that place where you're able to put your sensibilities on the table and compromise and talk about that solution. And I think last night was a great discussion. I mean, the World Affairs Council and the crowd that came down to Bricolage was incredibly engaging. One of the best crowds I think I've ever had as far as just being able to talk sensibly about the issue and about some of the challenges and some of the strides we need to make in order to get down the road to an energy future.
And I would be remiss if I didn't mention the World Affairs Council of Pittsburgh and the fact that they brought you here. And if you missed the presentation last night, we are having the conversation here right now. You can join it at 412-246-2002 with your comments and questions about the middle ground when it comes to the debate about the great energy debate that is taking place in America today. 412-246-2002, the number to call. Our email address, esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh. Does this really come down to an argument about at the end of the day, is it really about global warming and climate change? Isn't that what fuels the people who are on one side of the issue or another, as far as the bridging the gap and finding that middle ground?
I think climate change is certainly something that that is a part of the conversation. But again, I mean, it all depends on where you are in the conversation, what's happening to you personally, right? I mean, whether it's accessibility to energy, energy development in your backyard could be the impetus of the polarization. You know, just the idea of what the energy is and how much we use of it. I mean, you can see incredibly caustic arguments over sustainability or over conservation versus efficiency. It just seems to be one of these things that strikes people from one side to the other. And the issue is that when you bring about this polarization, or when the polarization naturally occurs, one of the things that upsets me the most about it, one of the things I think that drew me to the issue, is that it brings about stasis. And stasis means we're not moving forward on the energy issue. And I think that's
what you're talking about is the fact that for the last 114 years, cars run on the same fuel that they always have, gasoline, and so it requires digging up oil, and we still use a lot of gas. And despite all of the things that we've seen that have changed technologically in society with radar and radio waves and television and satellites and computers, that we're still relying on the same fossil fuels from the turn of the 19th century to the 20th.
I think it's that, and it's also sort of the utilization and the advancement of those technologies as they exist through sort of the functions that we want to or I shouldn't say that we want, that we do use on a daily basis. I mean, you know, to me, when I say stasis, I mean, it's really the coming together of every side of the discussion in order to work on a long-term solution. I mean, you know, like fossil fuels or hate fossil fuels, they're going to be around for a while, right? So let's figure out the best way to extract them in a sustainable, affordable, and environmentally responsible way. And sometimes the argument sort of stops the advancement from taking place. And I think that, you know, for me, I mean, when you talk about sort of the old technologies, you're absolutely right. But at the same time, you know, this advancement of the new technologies, or even doing what we do or better, can be the first steps that we need to walk towards an energy future.
So when people think about things like who killed the electric car, for example, is that a source of frustration for some people? And I'm trying not to be on one side of the issue or another, or to, you know, inject my opinion into this, but it just seems amazing that a society as advanced as ours can evolve to such a dramatic extent scientifically over a period of time, and yet sources of energy have stayed the same. It, you know, regardless of whether you're for or against fossil fuels, it's sort of amazing, isn't it, that we're still using the same stuff?
I would say that there are some technologies that blow my mind a little bit. I think one of the technologies that really does surprise me that it's stuck around as long as it has is battery technology. And really, when you look at what a clean energy future could be, when you look at sort of the what could be the advent and sort of the revolution of renewables, it really does sort of rest in the hands to a certain degree of battery technology, because as we all know, the sun doesn't provide energy at night, and neither does the wind in most cases. So you know, that battery technology being what it is, which is that same technology that has existed for 100 plus years, that blows my mind. So I think that you're spot on that.
412-246-2002 is the number to call if you'd like to join our conversation with documentary producer and director Gregory Kallenberg, who is with us today on the heels of his presentation last night at Bricolage, sponsored by the World Affairs Council of Pittsburgh. Again, he is a documentary producer and director, and has come up with the Rational Middle Ground series to encourage a dialogue about energy issues based on mutual respect. Tony in Buffalo Mills is on the line. Tony, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Excuse me. Hi.
Hi.
I just tuned in, and this is kind of a subject that is near and dear to my heart because I have a 5-year-old son. And recently you were just talking about a stasis or a stagnation, if I'm understanding what a stasis is. And in the debate and talking about the rational middle, and the problem with looking for a rational middle is the amount of misinformation that we're all fed on, to the tune of, like, you know, what I just read recently, that people like the Koch brothers and others are spending upwards of $1 billion a year to misinform us about climate change, and about the solidity of the science. And, you know, there's a fact that sustainable life on Earth depends on us getting back to 350 parts per million in terms of carbon in our atmosphere, if I'm understanding that correctly. And so if you're looking for a rational middle, you have to have a forum in which facts are presented and misinformation is revealed. You know, so
That's a good point, Tony. And what about that, Gregory?
Well, you know, and Tony, I appreciate your comments, and I totally agree with you. I mean, when you look at sort of the information sources out there, you're absolutely right in the sense that they sort of sit on one side and sort of preach to their choir on the other side. You know, what we've tried to do with the Rational Middle is really enlist a group of experts from all sides of the perceived spectrum. And brought them to the table to discuss these issues. And what we're trying to do is to create that forum that has those facts in it. I mean, everything that's in the Rational Middle is backed up by governmental facts, and we actually post the papers that are quoted in it too. So to us, you can go as deep as you want with the Rational Middle. And that in part is really to get people sort of engaged with it. But what's more important than that is that this groundswell or this collection of a movement occurs under this, you know, in the sense that that with these facts that people can have those discussions and move those solutions forward and do it in a place that is sort of outside of both extreme sides of the discussion.
And Tony, thank you for that phone call. And I think part of what he was getting to is this idea that in trying to be nonpartisan, in trying to look at the middle ground, bring everybody together and not turn away anybody's ideas, that you might be giving too much weight to one side that has an agenda and may not be presenting positive information or information that you know to be true and in fact may be kind of skewing it to present a certain point of view.
Well, you know, and we work very hard to strike the middle ground on it. And, you know, again, I want to make it clear the middle ground doesn't mean that we're boring. You know, we're not trying to sort of, you know, give everyone equal voice. I mean, there are issues like climate change that that we sort of accept as true. And therefore, when you watch What's at Stake, we're really giving sort of the idea that climate change is an issue that we have to take care of or we have to keep our eye on as we help plan an energy future. I mean, it's not easy being in the rational middle. And again, you know, the gut checking takes place every day with us where there are experts out there that you know, again, look at our list and let us know. I mean, it's always say, you know, let us know if you're finding something that is skewed in these films. And, you know, again, the second season of films that we just released, we've had a lot of great feedback on.
How is our collective ability to understand and embrace the importance and necessity of energy going to be more pressing as we move into the future?
Well, you know, I think that that there is an issue out there that is as big as climate change but also walks hand in hand with climate change, which is, you know, the United States is we're one user of energy. You know, we use a lot of energy here. But the places that you really have to look at that are potentially dangerous in whether it's the climate change is the issue or the utilization of energy or energy security, if you want to throw that word out there, it's the developing nations that are also utilizing these energies. When you look at India, you look at China, you look at Pakistan, look at these developing countries, their utilization of energy is going to far surpass the United States. And the issue right now in places like China is they don't really have, one, the safeguards, or two, even the desire to sort of create an energy future that has any semblance of being clean, because they just need so much energy for their economic engine.
So they're going to throw the environmental concerns to the side because they just we don't care how we get the energy, we just have to have it.
They already have. I mean, there are groups over there like the Environmental Defense Fund that are coming back with horror stories. Now, you know, that's the bad part of it. The good part that should be one of the impetuses for us creating an energy future or a pathway to the energy future is that China also does a lot to emulate what we do in the United States. And I think that the United States needs to provide a model to the rest of the world on how to do this right. And so to me, when you look at those big issues and the reasons why we should be sort of you know, creating that clean energy future, I think that we have to provide a global model because, again, once you start to extrapolate energy out and you start to look at a growing middle class in some of the other places, I mean, we are going to be sort of the minor player in energy use in the future, not the major one.
Do we run the risk of creating energy at the expense of other natural resources? For example, the debate over the Keystone XL pipeline is that some say that may be a safer way to transport oil, but if there's a leak and it happens to – oil happens to leak into the Oglala Aquifer, which the Keystone XL pipeline would travel over or into, then at what point are you really running a risk of creating energy but also maybe ruining your water supply?
Well, I mean, again, there is a cost benefit and a risk reward analysis we have to do with every resource. I don't know a lot about the XL pipeline issues besides what I read in the newspaper, just like everyone else does. But, you know, I mean, to me, I think to, you know, not look at all pipelines the way you look at the XL pipeline. I mean, there are a lot of pipelines in the United States. And I think that any safeguards that are going to be looked at with XL need to be looked at across the board. So, I mean, to me, you know, where the resources go and how they get there should be a primary place of focus when you start looking at sort of the safeguards that need to be put in place.
Let's take one last call. We're just about out of time. Carlana in Pittsburgh, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. We are down to just a few seconds, so if you could make a quick point or question.
All right, I'll be quick. I was a consultant to the U.S. Department of Energy, and I was in the U.S. Department of Energy building in Washington, D.C. when the Reagan administration came in. And the reason why we don't have renewable energies all of our energy coming from renewables and the clean energy is because Reagan took everything out of the Department of Energy except oil, gas, coal, and nuclear. And all of the work that had been done during the Carter administration on renewable energy was thrown out. And I absolutely can – that's a fact, and I can prove it.
No, it's a good point, and I guess as we wrap this up, Gregory Kallenberg, have we just had a lot of restarts when it comes to renewables?
You know, we have, but I will tell you that we are in a pretty amazing time in the sense that the proliferation of renewables is happening. Look at places like Texas. Look at places like Colorado. I mean, there's a bright future for renewables, and it's a lot closer than people think.
Documentary producer director Gregory Kallenberg has been our guest. We've been talking about his Rational Middle Energy series. He was in Pittsburgh last night presenting on behalf of the World Affairs Council and Bricolage. Gregory Kallenberg, thank you so much for joining us for a fascinating conversation.
Hey, this was a blast. Again, please go to rationalmiddle.com and see the films. They're free to download. Share them with your friends and family and have that discussion because that's the way we take these first steps towards an energy future.
And we'll put a link to that on our website at WESA.FM.
That's
thanks
awesome.
Again.
Thank you.
Coming up, could a better way to repair potholes be coming to our rescue? It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.